There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, I guess it's my turn again. Let's do this. 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. A lot of M's there. Hey, I'm Sean. All right, so next couple hours, you and I, we've got live local talk. Phone number, text line, it's open. 343-0106, 343-0106. Kind of lay out what's going to happen on today's show, but I want to... Kind of, while it's still fresh in your mind, of course, the voice of Councilwoman Gina Gregory that starts off the intro to Midday Mobile, which is my attempt here at a pivot and a segue into our first story of the show. This up from Dale Leash over at Landyap. We talked to Rob Holbert from Landyap about this last week, and it looks like it's going to happen. It's as of, okay, let's see. As of today, I guess officially they're going back to virtual meetings for the Mobile City Council. Now, you know, we talked about this last week. The question was raised, while more businesses are opening up, more things are going the way of socially distanced, but mask and all that, right? Taking precautions, but getting back to some semblance of what it was like before, you know, we went into shutdown mode. The Mobile City Council is going the other way. So a Dale story says this: those interested in addressing the Mobile City Council on an agenda item at Tuesday's meeting have until noon today. And this was a couple days ago. I think this was, he posted this up yesterday. Maybe, no, it's today. All right, he posted it up this morning. So you have till right now, we missed that, to give that item for the meeting, right? So you had to contact the city clerk's office and do that. So you missed out if you had something pressing you want to do with the council. Then Dale says this: council decided last week to return to virtual meetings via Zoom. Citizens can reach out, can reach the clerk's office at cityclerk@cityofmobile.org. Citizens who have met the deadlines outlined above will receive information on how to join the virtual meetings. This is going to be... I can't wait for tomorrow. Because if you remember when they were doing the virtual meetings before and the Zoom call with the members of city council, they had them in the Brady Bunch stack there with everybody. And I told you I had some moments of zen early on when some members of the council didn't realize they had started the meeting yet, or they were on Zoom yet, and they were extremely casual. And that I enjoyed that. So I guess that's coming back. Whomever is going to be addressing the Mobile City Council, I guess I'm guessing here, and Dale, if you're listening, you can correct me, will pop up in a like their own box in the Zoom call with the members of the city council. They'll have to keep making the boxes smaller as people come on. So there's, if it's going to be video, just think of what we might see in the video live streaming, the virtual city council meeting when it pops. If Sullivan in Mobile wants to, you know, Sean Sullivan wants to ask this, and then give your address, and then I pop up and got like a clown wig on or something. Story says council will also hold a number of key committee meetings this week as they return to virtual meetings. This afternoon at 3, Council Capital Improvement Program Committee will meet to discuss the status of the program. Council Vice President C.J. Small, who's chair of the committee, is joined by Councilman Fred Richardson and John Williams. Tomorrow, following the regular council meeting, the Rules Committee will meet at 1:30 to discuss the council's meeting rules with regard to public and council members' time for public address and deliberation. Councilman John Williams, who chairs the committee, is joined by Councilwoman Bess Rich and Councilman Small. Following that, 2 p.m., Public Safety Committee will meet to discuss proposed changes to the ordinance creating the Police Citizens Advisory Committee. Councilman Fred Richardson, who chairs the committee, is joined by Councilwoman Gina Gregory and Councilman John Williams. So, all this stuff virtual, Now, it's, I mean, you'll go to the same stream if you're somebody who likes to live on the edge and watch the Mobile City Council meetings on Tuesday, if you like to live that kind of edgy lifestyle. And I'm with you. I'm one. But now we'll be watching the Brady Bunch boxes there. And then I'm really, I'm circle back around to this, because they're saying that if you make the application, I guess, tell them what you're going to ask, you know, you want to address the council, then they will give you a link to join the virtual meeting, which to me means you're going to pop up in a Zoom box in, you know, with everybody else. I'm not saying anything's going to go on, but you're talking about a formula for hijinks to ensue? That's it. All right. And speaking of like digital and streaming and all that, for we've had the outage this morning with the streaming, letting y'all know if you want to go back and check it, streams back on. The people at the national company that provide the streaming have obviously MacGyvered and taped up their stuff and gotten it back working. So we're back full speed on that. So that's good news. Also, you heard the mention from Jeff and Representative Simpson earlier about the SEC announcement this evening, the official one. I think it's 6 o'clock, but I know that Paul Feinbaum has a insight into this that very few of us have. So I'm sure starting at 2 today, we'll get a pretty good look into the schedule announcement on that. Right. Oh, and also going on tonight in the midst of that, and I don't know, I got to check back here, because tonight Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin and Alabama Senator Doug Jones to be addressing the virtual DNC convention. So that will be happening tonight, and it will be, I don't know if it's going to conflict. Let's see if there are times, and Leanna, maybe you can help me with this too, and see the time of the beginning of when we're going to get the commentary from the Alabama crew, so Woodfin and Jones, when they're going to be addressing the DNC, and at the same time, when the SEC schedule announcement will be made, because it'll be tough for the ratings back in Alabama, even for big diehard Democrats in Alabama, to not watch the SEC announcement and in turn watch a mayor and our senator, one of our senators. So I think it's going to be a programming. Maybe they'll have them spaced here, so the state of Alabama will come in big for the DNC virtual. Will you be watching the convention, the virtual convention? I mean, do you ever watch? Did you? Okay, how about this? Did you watch the conventions when they were traditional? And then, does it make any difference to you or not whether you'll watch it when it's virtual? So that's one of the side questions on our text line at 343-0106. So that's happening tonight. So there's a couple things on the list. All right, let's lay out a couple things that are coming up on the show today. Joining me here in just about 15, 18 minutes, something like that. Depends on what clock I'm looking at. John Sharp from AL.com is going to join us. You know my obsession with the liability questions surrounding coronavirus. Well, I've pointed out that you got Operation Warp Speed, you've got the smartest minds in science out there working on a vaccine for the actual virus, the COVID-19 virus. At the same time, the economy needs a vaccine, I believe. And we're going to get into some of the questions, what happened in Tuscaloosa and the question about the bars and all that. But what bars and restaurants and candle shops and everything else out there are looking for in the world is some idea of immunity from lawsuit. Not, I believe they're going to win. I believe private business will win if they're sued. But by the end of it, are you? Is it a pyrrhic victory? Are you bankrupt and didn't have time to work and all that because you're fighting a lawsuit that was brought because somebody said they picked up COVID in your establishment? Mitch McConnell has pushed that at a federal level. Of course, that bill's going nowhere right now out of the House. In the state, we can't do anything about it because we're out of session right now in the state. No special session coming our way, so that's not going to happen. But if you're a school, at least this headline may make you feel better if you're running a school system. You're 10 foot tall and bulletproof when it comes to liability. We'll talk about that coming up at about 12:35 with John Sharp. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
A big thank you, Leanna, just answered the question. So the DNC virtual with the pre-recorded speeches and all that starts at 8 tonight. So that's 8 to 10 tonight, all time central, because we're local. So 8 to 10 central time is when that runs. SEC announcements, schedule announcement starts at 6. Now, there'll be a bunch of, use a technical term here for the media business, goings-on. There'll be goings-on. They won't probably get right to it. But in the state of Alabama, someone could catch both events if you want to watch it. Larry checking in from Matt Moore said, I bet that 95% of those watching online DNC will be from the many media networks and journalists. Yeah, I mean, I'll watch some of it, Larry. I'm going to watch, you know, I'm going to watch Senator Jones. I'm going to watch Mayor Woodfin, because that's in our state, right? And people will be talking about it tomorrow. So, you can count me, I guess. Do I count officially as media? I guess I do. Larry, you're right on me. Matt said, hope no one gets thrown out of the meeting along with the toilet flush like the Supreme Court case earlier. Do y'all remember that when they were doing the virtual argument? I mean, it was a real argument in front of SCOTUS, but they're doing it virtually. There's still the question, which was it? By the way, Matt, I still don't believe it's the person talking that flushed the toilet. Think of somebody else in that. Just in the few weeks that I paid attention to the virtual meetings for the Mobile City Council, there were some hijinks in there as well. We'll see as they go back to it tomorrow. All right. This is going to happen. Something we're going to do later in the week, just to point out that we're on the story, and because I got a text about what's going on with 2021 snapper season. I have had about an hour and a half worth of phone calls, if not more, with folks in the know. Say right now, unless something major changes, it does not look good. We'll have to talk about it. I'm gonna get some of the people that are way more informed on this. In other words, not on the snapper part of it, but way more informed on the procedure and what's happening with NOAA and the Gulf Council and our state. I'm gonna get them on later on in the week. So that's coming. We are watching that story. I've been researching it. I'm just trying to get it from where it's maybes to what they feel strongly might happen. You see what I'm saying? There's like there's a lot of maybe going on in that discussion right now, but I'm trying to get on into some more detail. All right, so I want to hit this quickly before we get John Sharp on with us coming up at about 12:35. So first story, there's two stories, both from AL.com, so I'm just going to run through them because one, I think, sets up the second one. It's important to read the first one here. So the headline here, Tuscaloosa issues 12 citations, makes 4 arrests. Greg Byrne, Walt Maddox vent about unmasked crowds. Okay, so the story from Carol Robinson over at AL.com said, Tuscaloosa police issued 12 citations and arrested 4 people on 7 charges Sunday night after numerous social media posts circulated showing large crowds in violation of COVID-19 regulation at bars along the Strip. University of Alabama Athletic Director Greg Byrne tweeted the photo yesterday afternoon of large crowds of people waiting to get into Tuscaloosa bars. The majority of those shown in the photo were not wearing masks, nor were they socially distanced. So Byrne said on his Twitter, said this on Twitter of the photo, who wants college sports this fall? Obviously not these people. We got to do better than this for each other and our campus community. Please wear your mask. His tweet was accompanied by a number of emojis, including the facepalm and mask emoji. In fact, we're pointing out which emojis were in there. Tuscaloosa Mayor Walt Maddox shared Byrne's tweet with these words, why? We are desperately trying to protect the city of Tuscaloosa. We are trying to have college football season. We have been running details for 3 straight nights. TPD is stretched thin between COVID-19 and these details. We will be requesting daytime help from UAPD. Goes on to say wearing a mask and protecting social distancing is not much to ask for you to protect yourself, your family, your friends, and the jobs of thousands of people, the mayor continued. Maddox went on to say TPD and fire were coming in early and would be actively enforcing. They said, it's a damn shame that our officers who are stretched thin across the city, who are working to exhaustion, can't have a few hours of downtime, end quote. So there's the, because they're getting ready to start back in Tuscaloosa, right? So the folks are lined up, they're getting ready to go into bars or hanging out on the street or whatever. And then one of the bars that was getting the pushback on social media on this is a little old place called Galette's right there. Pretty much your closest point to the stadium, if you happen to have ever visited this place, gotten a Yellowhammer or something like that. By the way, that place has changed a lot since I was a student there many decades ago. So Now, Ben Flanagan at AL.com writes this, and this is from the perspective of the owner of Gillette's, who said, we did nothing wrong. It says, amid backlash at crowded lines in and around his Tuscaloosa bar on Sunday, Gillette's owner Jeff Sirkin defended his bar, which he said follows every guideline issued by the city and the state. Gillette's, a popular bar located on the Strip, Bow Tie, opened at noon on Sunday promoting specials related to Bid Day, the culmination of the University of Alabama's formal sorority recruitment week, when lines of people, many of whom were not wearing masks, appeared on social media. The photos appeared on social media. The bar was criticized with concerns about the potential spread of COVID-19. Now, let me stop for a second and say they can have this discussion, but I could put a picture of a child holding a black lab puppy on Christmas morning on social media, and some jerkwater that is just angry at the world is going to say something negative about it. Okay, y'all nodding along with me? I mean, the most innocuous post ever can go up on Facebook. It must be nice to have a puppy and have a tree in your house. Must be not. There's that guy, right? So they put pictures up, and then people started ripping on Gillette's. And Sirkin said, we did nothing wrong today on a Facebook post. He said, we opened at 12 noon with a line down the block, but some of you saw a picture and assumed we chose to endorse anarchy and lawlessness. It is not my responsibility to police people 50 yards from the entrance of my front door on city property. Logistically, it's impossible for me to enforce you wearing a mask down the street while you wait to come inside. Every single patron that entered my establishment wore a mask. Yeah, like it takes to the second story to get that detail in there. And the reason I bring this up is, number one, it's a story about Gillette's. But number two here, this is a question for municipalities elsewhere. So we have our rules in Mobile, right? The state has its rules. What if you got the place limited to 50% capacity or whatever, and somebody's waiting outside to get in, right? Because Tuscaloosa's law is like 50% capacity after 9 p.m., it's one of these silly, so earlier there's no chance of spreading, let's see, says, Gillette's owner said that what people saw in the photos of the crowded line did not translate to what went on inside, noting the bar is at 25% of their capacity for the entirety of Sunday, well below the 50% threshold that's mandated after 9 p.m. See, this is one of these arbitrary things, like, so after 9, you know, the 11 o'clock's the law for the state, right? You got to stop selling the booze after 11, but there, you got to go to 50% after 9. At 8:45, everything's cool with being over it, but at 9, you got to go to 50% capacity. What I'm getting to is this is not just a story from Tuscaloosa and sorority bid day and all that. This is a story of what is the responsibility of business owners outside their business. So say you have whatever it is. I mean, it could be a you know, I don't know, a place that sells slushies, whatever it is. And you got the greatest slushies, and people line up down the street to get them, and they're not wearing their mask there. When they come into your venue, you obey the rules as set by the municipality, the county, the state. You set the rules. But the Gladys Kravitzes of the world out there are ripping you on social media, and people are making, and the mayor is commenting on a tweet from the athletic director. What responsibility is it of this bar owner that somebody's 50 yards down the street or whatever it is, they're not in the business? How does that go on, too? You're going to walk down there and say, hey, person that's not even in my venue, so you're a private citizen, I'm a private citizen, but I'm going to tell you to put a mask on right now while you're in line. I think, see this both ways. You can say somebody who believes in the mask, you can look at some of the numbers. Is it a spurious correlation or not? I don't know, but we have seen numbers dropping since the mask mandate. So at the same time, you can say masks are good. You believe that they cause a reduction. Is it the responsibility of some owner who has a crowd lined up down the street to go find somebody 50 yards down and you know, tell them you better have a mask on? Ben asked, wonder why we didn't have all this media outrage over the lack of masks during the protests and riots. Well, on my side, probably because I don't, it takes a lot for outrage for me, but did I comment about every night during that? We go, yeah, it looked like a bunch of people, unless they had a mask on to hide their identity. And people had masks on to some of those protests. A lot of people didn't, or they had something that was not a COVID protection mask. So once again, this is not a story for this particular story of Gillette's, the bar in Tuscaloosa, that they did, according to this story, they did it by the book when the people were in there with the lessened capacity and everybody wearing the mask, which I don't know how they wear the mask and drink the beer. I don't. Or the Yellowhammer. Or there's some kind of rot gut bourbon and Coke mix. Ooh, that's, I live in there. I don't know how they did that part, but he complies with the, but still gets pilloried on social media. And like I said, just getting pilloried on social media is one thing, because like you can post up the picture of the children with the puppy by the Christmas tree with smiles on their face, and somebody on Facebook's going to be bothered by it. But to then have the mayor of that city jump in, athletic director and the mayor of the city jumping in, what are they supposed to do? Is it the job of the private business to go down the street and put masks on people? I don't think so. All right. Also here, as we discuss this story, it's one of liability, right? For businesses and for schools out there, this is one that I keep asking about, whether it's at a federal level with what Mitch McConnell has put in the HEALS Act, come out of the Senate, that doesn't look like it's getting passed anytime soon. Or the fact that you can't, you know, you had Senator Orr here in Alabama try to move a liability bill. They said, not, we're going to shut it down. Regular session's over, no special session. If you're a business out there, you're worried about liability, what's the protection? Talk about that, and we'll talk about what it means for schools with John Sharp next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:35 FM Talk 106.5. I say, how good does that sound, right? We've got the internal debate going here, right, with the addition of the Jeff Poor Show every weekday, 9 to noon, and the high density of country music, bump music that he uses, which some of them are all right, but are people on the text line, social media say, see, it's the country side with Jeff, and then Sullivan with his horrible rock and roll from Van Halen coming in the midday. Hey, I am who I am, all right? That's just who I am. So is my buddy John Sharp from AL.com, and another great story, I would say, this is one, Jeff, I have I'm glad you did this. John, I'm glad you did this story, because I've talked about this 10 times now. What about schools? What about schools? I wonder if they're not going back to school or going virtual for different school systems because they're worried about getting sued. And that's exactly what you tackle in this story.
Yeah, I reached out to several attorneys who I thought were well-versed in this field. And, you know, they kind of collectively all said that schools, especially public schools, have what we call absolute immunity, which essentially protects them and will largely protect them from lawsuits during this pandemic. And it's a little different. You know, the law can be a little, you know, as you know, the law is never set in stone, but there are some differences there, especially with private schools. We've had issues of waivers come up. Some of the TV news stations have covered here locally some issues with waivers being sent home to parents to sign. And I kind of tackled some of that as well. The bottom line in talking to the attorneys that I spoke to is that how difficult it's going to be for a plaintiff or a group of plaintiffs to be able to recover sizable rewards in any kind of lawsuit that they might file as a result of this pandemic.
Well, I want to get into the split between public and private for a second, in a second, but the absolute immunity, which sounds like a line out of a movie or something, which it might be, but the absolute immunity portion of this is absolute immunity, it sounds like, in reading your story, from losing, but not from being sued.
Right, exactly, and that's why school administrators and school officials reached out to Senator Arthur Orr in spring. He had a bill, essentially somewhat like the state version of what we're seeing on the federal side of things in this coronavirus relief package, that on the state side of things, the businesses and other entities wanted to be included in this immunity package, this immunity bill on the state side. So, you know, talking to Senator Orr, I said, well, school systems, don't they have what we call sovereign immunity, like a lot of public bodies? They just can't go around suing them because you disagree with what they do. For political reasons, but he said, "Yeah, that's the case, but there is no immunity from being sued." And so his bill was going to address some of those issues. However, you know, the legislature adjourned without taking it up. And now there's some thoughts, at least from Senator Arthur Orr. He said that, you know, if they do call a special session this fall, he would love to have that bill voted on and taken up. Apparently, in Tennessee, a very similar bill that Alabama had was voted on and approved during a special session, and basically a special session that was called just to address this issue. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Our neighbors to the north jumped on this particular issue and got it approved, and the governor signed it into law.
You know, it's one of the, in the discussions I've heard, Governor Ivey probably would be maybe worried what else would go on in a special session. But John, the governor dictates what a special session's about. So, I mean, I don't think it's too much of a stretch they would go to the governor and say, Governor Ivey, we want you to call a special session specifically for us to come back in and talk about Senator Orr's bill and immunity. She could, if she's worried about something else coming up, it can't if the governor calls a special. Unless there are some parliamentary procedures, but it's pretty rare that would happen. So my takeaway is, and you're the journalist, I'm the editorialist here, but my takeaway is she's not worried about it. So.
Well, you know, and I don't want to speak for the governor's office, but they did. Back in March, she signed a emergency, when the first state emergency order was filed in regards to this pandemic. You know, she signed an order basically granting immunity to businesses. This was something I believe the BCA was seeking, and, you know, there was a lot of, a feeling of relief that she did that. However, you know, I'm talking to Senator Orr, and I don't know the specifics, but he had indicated that, you know, there's some concerns whether or not that particular portion of the order could withstand a constitutional
right.
challenge.
That's what I heard as well, that executive, it's not a law, you know?
That's correct. There's a big difference there, you're right.
So, I mean, I think that's one of the worries, and because it doesn't look like, I don't know. From day to day, I don't know what's happening. But it doesn't look like the HEALS Act, the Republican bill to come out of the Senate in Washington, is not moving along very well. That does have that, you know, federal move for immunity there. I think the state's got to ask themselves, like you said, for Tennessee, what are they going to do at a state level to protect this? Because even in the case you point out in your story, John, we're talking about public school systems that have this absolute immunity, can still get sued and still have to rack up attorney's bills and still have to have time off of doing whatever they do every day at the school system.
That's correct. But you're also seeing a lot of it. And I'm not saying that there is an attorney out there, you know, out there seeking business to go after the schools. But some of the attorneys I talked to basically said, well, you know, we're not going to deal with these lawsuits. And, you know, and they typically perhaps would, but they simply said that, you know, this is not something that they're willing to take on right now. But that's not to say that there aren't attorneys out there that would.
Right.
And you're correct. You know, I think there's maybe about 10 to 12 states that have taken this issue up. So it's not just Tennessee. There are others out there. So Alabama certainly wouldn't be, you know, out on its own.
All right, let's move to this. One of the things that you mentioned a second ago, and people can read in the story over at AL.com, is this waiver thing. And the waivers are specific for what? Private and Catholic schools and all that, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, there's been some, there was, I believe, a TV story down here. I thought it was pretty well done. There was an attorney that I quoted my story as well that weighed in on that for the TV story as well, that, you know, basically that these waivers are being sent home to these parents to sign, but, you know, there's questions on whether or not, you know, whether or not they can, there's any validity to them. And, you know, whether or not it could be, you know, whether or not the private schools can force a parent, because the question is whether or not, you know, a student should enter into a pact with a private school administration on these particular issues. So it gets a little complicated there, but, you know, there's a lot of questions whether or not the waivers can even withstand themselves or be held up in a court of law.
But it does kind of tell me that there are, the law applies differently, right? So the absolute immunity is something for public schools. That, reading through here, that doesn't necessarily mean that's true for private or Christian or Catholic schools or Jewish or whatever.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, interesting aside on that is football games starting up this Friday. So you're not going to have to sign a waiver if you go to the home game over in Fairhope. I mean, that's a public school. You walk in, you know, probably I'm assuming everybody will be told to wear a mask as you arrive, but, you know, during the game, you know, there's going to be encouraging of social distancing. As long as these basic measures are taken, Fairhope and Baldwin County school system should be okay. However, if you go to a private school, it could be different. Now, I'm not saying I don't have any knowledge whether or not fans will be required to sign a waiver as they walk into the stadium, but that's, you know, one of the attorneys I spoke to said that, you know, that's quite possible. Don't be surprised if that happens, that, you know, you sign a waiver as you walk into the football game saying that, you know, I assume the risk of attending this game, type of thing. So whether or not that waiver can be stood up in a court of law is a different question. And then, you know, even with in Alabama, it's difficult to, you know, let's say hypothetically you get sick going to a private school function, and you want to sue that private school. I mean, you know, that there also comes into that whole question on how you're going to prove that you got the virus at the school. So it's
right.
You know, these are going to be difficult lawsuits, very difficult.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything that shows me that they can narrow it down to the minute, second that you know contracted it. And we'll go back to this discussion of going, like, we're going, you and I are going to go to the football game, and we got to sign waivers. Are we protecting, let's say we're going to Ladd Peebles, right? Are we protecting Ladd Peebles? Are we protecting the school system? I guess they're going to sue, they would sue everybody. I don't know.
That's a very good question. I would assume that it would be the school system that they're protecting in that particular case if you're signing a waiver to go watch that particular football game, but because they're the host team. But yeah, good question. I'm not an attorney on that one either. That you raise a good question.
But you talk. I mean, y'all got to read this from John because you talked to half the Alabama bar on this.
Well, and some of them provide some interesting, insights too, in some of the perspectives of law in this state that I didn't realize. You know, for instance, Alabama is one of like only a handful of states where we're recognized for we have what they call contributory negligence rule of law, which means that, you know, as a plaintiff, if I'm going to go out and sue an entity like a business or a school, I got to and I'm even 1% negligent and in my injury, that bars me completely from recovering any damages at all in a lawsuit. Whereas, so it makes it very difficult for plaintiffs to go around and suing and trying to recoup, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in damages. Whereas other states, there's a different type of determination. For instance, Mississippi and Louisiana, where, you know, the damaged party can recover monetary damages even if that party is 99% at fault. It's just kind of, there's a, you know, particular calculation that determines how much that person might be able to recover in damages. So that's kind of that was kind of interesting, I thought, as well. It's just going to be very difficult for anyone in Alabama to walk away with a big lucrative lawsuit. I mean, the injuring party, for instance, a school or a business or whatever, have to really be negligent to borderline criminal in how they are handling coronavirus, awareness.
There it is. Y'all read through this, and I tell you what, it's the best dive I've seen into this yet, John. So we appreciate your work. People can check it out at AL.com. Check you out over there. And also, if they want to talk some about this story or maybe talk about you picking a team to cheer for this year because your team's not playing football, where do they go on Twitter?
I'm a free agent. So
that's right.
John Sharp, 99.
All right. So just let me suggest before I put on Twitter, can you say Roll Tide? Can you do that for me? Can you?
Well, I've been here long enough where I have to say Roll Tide, so yeah, that's fine, man.
Oh, gosh, it's magic there to hear that. All right, brother, I appreciate your work. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Sean.
Coming right back. More Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5. What do you think? 343-0106. Also, to fair or not to fair, that is the question. Josh Woods joins us from the grounds coming up at 1 o'clock.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1251 FM Talk 106.5. Our phone number, 343-0106, 343-0106. Oh, I see this, a promo here for a YouTube video, I guess a video, yeah, it's a video PSA from Governor Ivey. Hey, Governor Ivey, I know y'all don't talk to me anymore, but if y'all gave us a radio version of that, I would run it. It's complete your 2020 census today. And Governor Ivey, I want to point out, I've been pushing this for over a year. Over a year, we've been talking about it, talked about it at length, too, with the Attorney General, Steve Marshall, about this. But Governor's reminding folks that we have until September 30th to fill out the census. You go online, y'all. It takes like 4 minutes. It is nothing. I know I'm preaching the choir. I know that. I do. Often I'll get emails like, Sean, quit. You know, we've all filled out the census. Well, I don't know if all of y'all have, but I know that most of y'all probably have. But if y'all like me, you got friends and kinfolk, just remind them. It is a nonpartisan issue. Nonpartisan issue. Number one, we could lose the congressional seat. One of our congressional seats. I mean, that's a big deal. It's a big, big deal. We're just running with seven right now, y'all. We're already at a disadvantage with that. And our senatorial delegation, so over in the more austere body, is going to go sometime in the next cycle or two. We'll go from being the most senior delegation before Jeff Sessions left the Senate to go be Attorney General, right? With Sessions and Shelby, let me correct myself, with Shelby and Sessions, we had the most senior senatorial delegations. I mean, look where, I mean, Shelby's head of appropriations. That doesn't just happen. I know, and I know all the term limit discussion and all that. And you know what? When all the other states want to term limit their senators and do all that, then I'm in. That's fine. I'm with y'all. I support that. But it's not happening, so I'm not going to make my state a sacrificial lamb in this. So we have a possibility here, if Shelby doesn't run again, that we will have, I mean, we'll be the pledges in the Senate. Be the punk kids of the Senate, right? And there's we'll have on votes, we'll have our two senators, right? We'll have our votes, you know, we'll have our 2 out of 100, we'll have those votes. But for delegation assignments and all the inside baseball stuff, we'll be limited. And then you're going to turn around if the census goes, you know, poorly here, we're going to be looking at not seven representatives in the House, but six. And then on the flip side, as they delegate, whether it's a Pell Grant, whether it's money for whatever project in the state with clean water, whether it's a project for rural broadband, whatever the project is, we will have a diminished, we'll get less, because they'll say, well, you know, we can sit over here and say the population in Alabama is this. Well, but if it didn't come through the census, it's like it doesn't exist when it comes to federal programs. This could be hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars for our state, and less representation. Other states having more say using one of our seats out there in Congress. It's bad. It's bad. So just do it. It's like I would not lead y'all astray, right? This is not. Just do it. It takes like 4 minutes when you go online. Good. Well, thank you, John, and Grant, and everybody else. I will keep talking about it. I have been talking about it for a long time, because it's just. I mean, it's just. This is like, you know, the frustration that I have, that many of y'all probably have too, when you see things going down the wrong track in our country, and you're like, I can't change that now. It's in bureaucrats' hands, or it's in the Supreme Court's hands, and you can only do what you do there. And you're going, that is frustrating. But this is one where we can. I think the reporting rate is like at 60%. Oh, and by the way, did get an answer. Remember this is why you have to put stories in full context. So it was last week, there were several stories out about how low the census reporting data was coming back from coastal communities. So number one, Alabama was low as a state. We were 63% now? But then the stories came back about like, one of my favorite places on earth, Dauphin Island, coming in at 17%. I think Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, and this is off the top of my head, they were like in the 20s or something like that in percent reporting. And I asked the question, I said, maybe it's because of rental homes. And I was like, there's no way that they're not factoring that in. That's in fact exactly what it is. So when you look at a stat, so when they report a headline and say, once again, I'm not letting our state off the hook, I'm still on my soapbox, but when they say 17% reporting out of Dauphin Island, well, they're taking the number of addresses, right? The number of households, or not households, because that means something else. Number of houses. Condo, or stick-built house, or they're taking that compared to the reports. Okay, so I was shocked the number for Dauphin Island, and once we double-checked it, it is actually based on the number of rooftops on Dauphin Island. Well, and you have places like that in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores that, not everybody's full-time resident, so that accounts for that. But it doesn't account for the 60-something percent census reporting for our state, so turn it around. And thank you, Governor Ivey, for, here a month and a half out from the absolute deadline on this, getting that PSA on TV. That's you, Jenny on the spot. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, 12:58. Coming right back, my buddy Josh Woods from the grounds is going to join us. I want to talk about the fair. And what do you do here if you're running an operation like the fair? Here we've got all these questions about social distancing and mask and this and that, and you got the fair coming up. How are they going to navigate this? Because right now you got the story out that they are delaying the Baldwin County Fair. What about Greater Gulf States Fair? What about Mobile County? What about the grounds? We'll talk to Josh about that when we come back. Right here on Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line 343-0106. You can also check us out, fmtalk1065.com. Want to see pictures of what people look like around here? Tread at your own risk. But you can check that out through the website as well. A bunch of other information like news stories, poll questions, show schedule, all there waiting for you right now.